Lawmakers get the latest prediction of state tax revenues. Is there enough money to increase school funding? The governor claims a record year for job creation. Who gets credit? Jim Merritt turns down a bid for mayor. Joe Donnelly gets a bill passed into law. And Amanda Banks plays a historic role in the state Senate. That plus a holiday lighting display with a charitable goal and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 19, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the State Budget Committee received the most recent forecast of state tax revenues. It will be the foundation for the next state budget.
Manufacturing jobs led by the car makers are growing faster in Indiana than in the nation as a whole. It's why economist Douglas Handler gave this assessment to the State Budget Committee.
Better to be in Indiana than a lot of other states in the region.
But there are problems here too, and they start in the gaming industry. Gambling tax revenues fell by 16% this year, down to the 2003 level, and will continue to fall. The problem is competition.
We continue to see the pressures from Illinois, Ohio, and the South Michigan tribal casinos.
It leads to a prediction that state tax revenues will grow by 2.4% in the 2016 fiscal year and by 3.2% in the 2017 fiscal year, the 2 years covered by the state budget that will be created in 2015.
What does the revenue forecast mean? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Schell. Mike McDaniel, first of all, does something need to be done to help out the gambling industry?
Well, I think what this revenue forecast indicates that because those revenues are lagging, That certainly gives ammunition going into the session for the legislature to talk about doing what they can to make us more competitive than the new people who've come on board in surrounding states, which this highlights that. And I think that'll be a good reason for a lot of people to jump on board to tweak the current law to make us more competitive in that way.
The casinos want live dealers. The riverboat casinos want land-based casinos. But the governor wouldn't address it this week, and key lawmakers have been opposed.
Well, you know, the problem is that there's been such a major national expansion of gaming that even if you went in and tried to fix this, it's a temporary fix. The reliance on gambling for underlying the budget of the state of Indiana is a foolhardy way to finance, and all you're doing is postponing the inevitable. It's not a solution.
So you're saying that they don't deserve help?
It's not a question of deserving help. The point of giving them help, it seems to me, is to bolster the tax revenue, and what I'm saying is even if you do that, it's going to be for a short term. It's not going to be a long-term fix.
Okay, so increases of 2.4 and 3.2. You know, we've heard people call for, Glenda Ritz among them, calling for a 3% increase in school funding. That seems unlikely.
That would be pretty high under the scenario presented by the economic forecast and the revenue forecast. With the amount of growth that they're saying, and I still think it's pretty aggressive, although, you know, I think there's a higher degree of confidence this time than there was in some previous forecasts. But I think a 3% increase in education with some of the other things that are being considered and a lot of the wants that are out there is probably unrealistic at this point.
Well, and keep in mind, too, that a 3% across-the-board raw increase in terms of education may not mean what it used to mean because of proposed changes in the way the funds are distributed. With different types of districts getting a greater percentage, certain dollars following students, and maybe going into coffers where they haven't gone in the past. So 3% is, I agree, is probably the top end of the spectrum, but let's just keep in mind that that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's going to walk away with the same percentage increase.
I think some folks were hoping for a better outlook than this.
Well, I mean, I think people thought it would be a modest increase that we would have, and that's certainly what we're looking forward to, and there's some cautious optimism. But you got to keep in mind that this is the one that the budget is built upon. But then again, in the final weeks of April, you get the one that will give you four more months of information that they make their final decisions on. So hopefully we'll have some growth there, and it will allow us to do some other things. But the good news is that education will be the focal point of the debate. And the problem, as John said, is that there are so many competing interests now on how you spend education money. And we spend more on education as a percentage of our budget than any state in the United States.
Over half.
65% of the budget goes to education.
Well, that's with K through 12.
Well, that's higher ed and everything. Well, it's still part of education.
Understood. But
so you've got that working. So you've got these competing interests. And you have the governor's priorities, then you have the legislators' priorities, and they will be vetted against each other as the session moves on. But that forecast in mid-April will be the deciding factor as to whether how much you can really do.
And Democrats will call for spending some of the surplus, right?
Oh, absolutely. And on top of that, it seems to me the idea of expanding the voucher money is absurd on the face of it, because it's not simply whether you get
a
3% increase. Whether you get a 3% increase. Some of the districts are really hurting because of the cap, and not just because of the property tax cap, but because of the values are down. So, for example, some townships in Marion County had more than 1% on a ceiling that's $1 billion higher than it is now, and they can barely keep body and soul together. So at least what you ought to do with the school districts, it seems to me, like the school district in Boone County that's crying that it needs additional assistance because it won't allow any industrial development in Boone County, or at least in Zionsville, seems to me you ought to allow them flexibility to move the money from one pot to another to accommodate their local wishes.
That's a further change in the formula that has seen a lot of change in the last several cycles. And so I think that actually might be something that could gain some traction to allow some more flexibility within the funding formula. And, whatever 3% means, it's going to mean something different at the end because of the changes that will be wrought in the formula.
Anytime you have... This is certainly better news than we've been grown accustomed to in the past few budget cycles, obviously. And some would think on the surface that makes life a lot easier because, hey, we actually have some money in the bank. You can't say no. And then and expectations. Everybody has expectations, as Mike suggested. When it's you're looking at a flat revenue stream or a drop, all of a sudden people know not to even approach the till.
Governor Mike Pence joined with representatives of 16 companies this week to declare 2014 as a record year for economic development in Indiana. But Democrats say the good news is tempered by the fact that wages in Indiana lag behind those in most other states. Indiana ranks 39th in per capita income. Nevertheless, Governor Pence held a State House ceremony to boast that Indiana made deals this year that will lead to 25,000 new jobs, more than $4 billion in private investment. And the Pence administration points out that those jobs pay slightly more than the current average in Indiana.
Indiana is on a roll, and businesses around Indiana and around America know it.
Record number of deals this year, billions of dollars of investment, and the fact that we're going to see revenues increase over the next 2 years, I think, should be an encouragement to every Hoosier.
And Delaney, why do Democrats feel the need to rain on that parade?
You know, when Mitch Daniels ran for governor, he said the only measure of state government success is whether individual income grows. Okay? Under the Republicans, we've shrunk from 91 cents on the national dollar to 86 cents. We are $6,500 in average household income below the national average. And what's happened here is, yeah, we're getting jobs, but between the Republican policies of helping the rich and hurting working people, the income for the average Hoosier has shrunk. And that's the measure of success, according to Mitch Daniels,
okay,
who is the gospel bearer of the Republican Party.
He's not there
Party.
Anymore. I don't know if anybody
Oh, but that's,
told
that
me, but.
Was the mantra we heard.
at this event, the governor announced 2,000 new jobs, but some of them don't arrive until 2023.
Anytime you make anytime you make a jobs announcement, you're talking about the growth of the company as they project it. Those incentives are offered that way so that you have this continued growth down the road. We have added, since 2009, more manufacturing jobs than all but one state in the union. We're second in the country in the increase in manufacturing jobs. And we're growing at a fast rate. And part of that is because we've done a good job of putting together a tax climate to bring jobs in. And as the economy starts to come back, and it is slowly, as it demonstrated by the first question and the revenue projections we have, we're leading 44 other states in the union in job creation. Now, what's missing in this whole thing is nobody ever talks about the fact that it's also cheaper to live in Indiana than it is in almost 40 other states in the union. So, you know, there's a factor there that never gets mentioned.
You're
in
not
this
worried
thing.
About the $6,500
look,
differential
look,
or the five
look,
the five
we're creating jobs
decline.
At a faster rate than almost every state in the union, and that's a result of what we put in place policy-wise. And what I don't hear ever. It's what the Democrat, they would do it differently.
Oh,
you don't
you'll
hear it.
You'll hear this
we
session.
Haven't. We
you'll
haven't.
Hear this
oh,
session.
I look
right.
forward to hearing it,
That's
how they
good.
Would do it better.
Hard to ignore, though, a lot of good economic news this week.
Sure.
In Indiana.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. When you look at these kinds of job announcements, there's probably no such thing as a bad job announcement, because that means some individuals who are underemployed, perhaps, or don't have jobs and have been looking, have an opportunity to earn a wage.
That won't support a family.
And
that's ridiculous. Those are all jobs.
What happens?
All those jobs are higher than the state average.
It is.
The question is,
and we're not going to be able to answer this today, even if we devoted the rest of the show to it, is how much of this is the rising tide nationally?
Yeah.
With
Indiana's doing
in
based on the presentation for the revenue forecast, Indiana is doing better than surrounding states.
That's true.
And it's nice to see that. And those jobs announcements that were made, as you pointed out, Jim, some of them are very far down the line. Some of them are much sooner. It's a political theater, is what that was.
Little showmanship, little salesmanship,
and that's fine because you know you're allowed to trumpet your own horn. But I think it's also wrong to ignore some of the basic facts, some of them which Ann pointed out, and another one which came through that economic forecast, is that in key demographic areas, Indiana is lagging. We are not preparing workers at a rate that we need to. We are aging out, and so the higher income people are starting to come out of the workforce, and the people replacing them are at far lower levels of income, which means the buying power will go even lower. So there are some demographic trends that Indiana has to address, and we haven't done a very good job of it at this point.
Well,
I think it's important to realize that under Mike Pence and the Republican Party, we are in a race to the bottom. And you know
That's
what?
Ridiculous.
He is winning.
That
he is
so
winning.
Ridiculous.
We are becoming the Mississippi of the North, which is exactly what we were worried
Ann,
about.
You are
all
so
along.
Wrong about that. We are
the
creating
only
jobs.
Measure of
the
success
last,
is
the last
growth
three legislatures,
personal income.
The last three legislatures have done more to address the workforce development issue than it had ever been
not
done.
Then why hasn't
it's starting
it
to happen,
take some
John?
Time
that's
to
where you're starting
to turn around.
Jobs you're getting.
Yeah. That's why the economic
you
trends.
Don't turn that aircraft carrier around overnight.
I mean,
it hasn't shown up in the economic trends yet, Mike.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Mike Pence be a candidate for president at this time next year? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, maybe. Last week's question was, does it make sense for the governor to go to Israel? 4% said yes, 91% said no, 5% said it's entirely up to him. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Republican State Senator Jim Merritt will not run for mayor of Indianapolis in 2015. Merritt says that it would be impossible for him to perform his duties as state senator at the same time due to the fundraising necessary to run for mayor. He says it will be a $4 million race. The Merritt decision leaves the Republicans with no candidate at the moment. Marion County GOP Chairman Kyle Walker.
I've said all along, I think it's far more important to have a great candidate than it is to rush into just having a candidate at all. And again, we have several folks that are considering a run.
John Ketzenberger, will the Republicans find a candidate with gravitas?
Well, I guess gravitas is in the eye of the beholder. Nobody thought that the current mayor had any gravitas when he was running, and yet he won two terms. And so I don't think you can rule anything out at this point. It is very early still, and I will be shocked if the Republicans don't have at least one candidate rise to the top, if not some others, to come compete for the job.
It's getting late.
It is, and you would think ideally that somebody would have, with the ability to raise significant money or access, is already sitting perhaps on a war chest or has some sort of grassroots network throughout the city. Ideally, that's what a county chair would want to see. That's not happening. But I think anybody who looks at this race knows the demographics, knows that it's going to be increasingly difficult for Republican, regardless of what name is in front of the R,
right,
to win in a mayoral race in Indianapolis. You look back at the most recent general election, and even though you had a dominance by Republicans statewide for statewide offices, look what happened in Marion County and in Indianapolis, where it was a Democratic sweep. So it's going to be tough for anybody to throw his or her hat in the ring.
Where will the GOP find a candidate?
I don't know. Kyle Walker is looking for that candidate. I was surprised that Jim Merritt decided not to do it, because I think he wanted to really take a look at doing this. He told me he did. That's. I think the demographics of this are clearly a key factor. I think people looked at the results in the last election, and with the overwhelming victory that Republicans had statewide, they got swamped in Marion County. I think that has a major factor. Now, Ballard could have won again. There's no doubt in my mind of that, because he's looked upon as a guy that's trying to do a good job for this city. And Hogsett's vulnerable. Clearly, he can be beaten.
Republican research will tell you that in the last 10 years, there are only two Democrats who have lost Marion County, and Joe Hogsett's one of them.
Well, and he could be beaten in this race. But you got to have a candidate, somebody, as you said, with some gravitas, which to me means start with some name ID, and then they got to be well funded. So it is going to be a $4 million race, and time is running out to raise that kind of money.
And Joe Hogsett's sitting pretty.
Looks that way. I think they'll look for a non-traditional, which is the euphemism for a white male that can self-fund and in business with no voting record.
The Jacob Sexton Military Suicide Prevention Act of 2014 is now law. The measure, authored by Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly, is named after a National Guardsman from Farmland, Indiana, who killed himself while on leave from Afghanistan. The bill calls for more mental health screenings in the military and better treatment. It's part of the defense authorization bill that is to be signed today by the president. John Schwanis, Donnelly has now gotten one more bill passed than Evan Bayh. Does that matter?
Well, I guess if you're keeping score, you'd like to have a few notches on your belt. This is a great bill. I mean, if you're going to have be known for a piece of legislation that you've authored and shepherded through the process, this is one that I guess it's cliche to say that it enjoys wide support, both sides of the aisle. But it's much needed, and you look at the statistics, and it's...
Donnelly has statistics today that in 2013, I believe 125 people died in combat from the U.S., and almost double that.
It's far more...
Died from suicide.
Suicide is a far bigger
risk. This is so broad. It doesn't just deal with active duty, which is what's so important, and it requires the annual physical for mental health purposes. I mean, it's an inspired piece of legislation that should have some really positive impact on those absolutely horrendous statistics.
And a lot of credit here goes to Jacob Sexton's
parents,
Jeff and
Barb, who relived this over and over again to get it passed.
And fought for 2 years to get it through Congress.
Well, as Ann said, it's much needed. It's but one of the many things that we should do for the people who have served for so long for the country. And if there's anything that the United States can do, it's to try to prevent suicide and deaths at their own hand because of the experiences that they've had. So I'm happy it passed. It doesn't matter who got it done, but I'm glad that it got done.
Well, it does matter who got it done.
Well, you can keep score.
So Donnelly did a pretty darn good job with that.
You can keep score with that, sure.
Donnelly's proven to be pretty effective.
On this bill, I thought he did a good job. I thought this was a great piece of legislation. Senator Coates was a co-sponsor, and as John said, it got wide bipartisan support. I think the real value in this, not only in helping prevent these suicides, but also it will help determine those people who really need help, who might go on to do other things besides suicide that would be problematic in our society.
Right. That's right.
And
too.
I think
sure.
that is a significant part of what will benefit from this bill
Excellent
as it moves
point.
Forward.
Moving on, Amanda Banks took the oath of office to become a state senator this week. It's a historic event because Banks was selected to fill in for her husband, Jim, who is now serving our country in Afghanistan, a move made possible under a new law. Amanda Banks will serve on an interim basis until Jim Banks returns following the 2015 session. She is a Republican from Columbia City and says she will likely vote in much the same fashion that her husband would.
We share the same conservative values, so I can't imagine there's not anything we'll disagree on, but it'll be very small if it is.
And Delaney, all in the family, is that a good thing?
It's perfectly appropriate. I mean, she's going to, I assume that they're pretty consistent in their attitudes and all that, so I think it's great that she's doing it. I think she'll do credit to them.
Do you see her playing a leading role or my question is, she's there on an interim basis. Will she sit on her hands?
Do you see any new member playing a leadership role in the legislative body, regardless of who they are and in what body they're in? I mean, look, she's the senator, and she'll do her job and represent her constituents. Now, will she be the person that, you know, takes the lead on major pieces of legislation? No, but nobody expects that to happen. You know, this is a good thing, and he's serving our country, and this was a good conclusion to that problem of him, you know, making the sacrifice that he is for his family and his country. And we'll move forward with this. And as she pointed out, somebody asked her the question, will you be calling him constantly for advice?
Time difference.
And she said there's a major time difference yeah. here. They'll be sleeping while we're in session.
Although he seems to spend, from what I know, a fair amount of time online.
She said they talk a lot every week.
Yeah. I thought we fixed that with daylight saving time. Is that
yeah,
not the issue?
I still have that basket on my front lawn for the money. I mean, yeah. it hasn't been filled yet.
Well, he points out correctly, you look back, you don't see many new members who take leadership positions. The question, though, how many try? There are those who try to play a prominent role, and I don't see her as somebody who would be out trying to grandstand as the occasional new member does. Yeah.
But it's kind of a feel-good story.
It's a great story, so it's exactly why we need to get her in the gridiron this year.
What date is the gridiron?
Gridiron's on March 3rd.
Oh, thank you very much.
Man, another gridiron plug.
Thank you.
Finally,
it's in April on the other side of the world.
Finally, a holiday tradition turned fundraiser continues to grow in Kokomo. The We Care Park light display is celebrating its 20th year. Michael Wyatt owns the park. He says friends help him set up the millions of lights. They start preparing in August. It's free to drive through the display, but donations are accepted. Wyatt says the park has raised nearly $900,000 for charity in the past 6 years.
When you come from 16 children, you was taught to share all your life. So I hope that I've shared my life with a lot of people, and I know I have, and I know all my helpers have.
Mike McDaniel, Wyatt says that when he retires, that display will get bigger. How much is too much?
Well, look, the people in that community look forward to that every year, and the money they're raising is astronomical. This was a great idea. A lot of people decorate, but few people take advantage of it to give back to the community the way he has, and this is tremendous.
Yeah, he served on the city council up there. All of the money raised goes to help needy in the Kokomo community.
It's great. I mean, the Kokomo's got a lot going for it. Mayor Goodnight's done a great job up there, and I think this is, as Mike says, it's very illustrative of turning something, which is a nice thing to do in the first place, into a really substantial contribution to people in need, and that's a great thing.
You know, I think it's interesting that Mike mentions this is astronomical because I heard that you can see it from the International Space Station, so it gets wide coverage.
Are you making that up?
Yeah. No, you can see it from the space station,
okay.
Ann.
I guess the good news is his neighbors don't seem to mind.
Everybody can support a good cause like this. It's a good thing.
Merry Christmas. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org. Starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.